You're listening to Mark and Tom on the Sunday Sports Show, Halton Community Radio, 92.3 FM. It's just gone 5 o'clock and we're very pleased and honoured that we've been joined in the studio by Runcon and its chairman and lifelong fan, Derek Greenwood. Derek, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Mark. Thank you for inviting me.
I know you've driven down a long way. It's great to have you in the studio. We're going to have a nice long chat about all things Runcon. We've asked people to email in over the last couple of days, and I collared a few at the match yesterday as well to get some questions. It only seems right to start with one. Kenny and Weston, where did it all start? What's first inspired you to go and watch Runcorn?
I suppose I have to say, Mark, it was like most people at that time. It was inspired by my father, I suppose. He took me down to Canal Street first time. We're talking about early 1950s.
Yeah.
No televised football in those days, of course. No big league teams to support. And you supported your local team. And that's where it all started for me. And I suppose at that point, I became hooked. I don't think I was unusual in that sense. All those people who know me nowadays, of course, a lot of people might not know I was actually born and brought up in Runcorn, of course.
Yeah.
Even though for the last 30-odd years, I've travelled all the way down from East Lancs to watch the team. But the beginning was very much that, and I got hooked on it from that time onwards, I suppose.
So we'll paint a picture of Runcorn FC in the 50s. Runcorn were at Canal Street. They played in the Cheshire League.
Sure, yeah.
And we'd be looking at crowds of...
Yeah, you'd be looking at crowds on big matches of anything up to 5,000.
And playing against... Who were the bigger sides? And Ellesmere Port?
Ellesmere Port, Altrincham, Macclesfield, all the big Cheshire derbies. But Ellesmere Port was always the big
game.
The big local derby.
Yeah.
Usually around Christmas time or Easter time. And that was very much the way I remember the 1950s. You're talking then about huge crowds, huge support for the club. And that was in an era when the club wasn't particularly successful. It wasn't a hugely successful club when I first started watching them. They were very much players who had league careers. The first manager I really remember was Cyril Lello.
Yep.
Cyril Lello had played for Everton, 200 plus games, I understand, for Everton. Came to Runcorn and brought a lot of those ex-Everton and Liverpool players to the club with him. So, no great success, but I suppose it was our chance as kids to watch some of those stars on the way down. And that was non-league football in those days. It was watching ex-league players at the latter end of their career. And that's how I remember it, I suppose.
Of course, we probably should say, for the younger listeners, that this is not an era of conference football and a football pyramid. The Cheshire League would have been one of the outstanding non-league divisions of that time, I would think.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I knew I was coming here, Mark, I just had a look back, and the Cheshire League was very much regarded as the top league in the north of England at that point. The Cheshire derbies, when we mentioned teams like Altrincham and Macclesfield and so on, they were the top non-league teams in this part of the world, and Runcorn was very much up there with them. So no, the Cheshire League was a very, very strong non-league setup. But of course, at that era, there was no talk of pyramids, football pyramids, promotion into the league. It was very much a non-league setup for local people to watch their local team. And that's what people did in those days. That's exactly what everybody else did. I was not unusual in that sense. A lot of my friends went to watch Runcorn as well.
Yeah.
A special friend I had, we had a competition in those early days of seeing who could do all the Cheshire League games, all the Cheshire League grounds, should I say. And my last one was at Wrexham, because we had teams like Wrexham Reserves in there. We had teams like Tranmere Reserves in there as well.
Sure. Dave in Langdale Road, which I presume is the Runcorn Langdale Road, and there's one in Widnes as well, it'd be the Runcorn one, I think. Can you remember the first game that you ever attended, and did we win?
Yeah, the answer is no, I can't, unfortunately. And I've looked back a lot to my programmes and so on. But I didn't really start collecting programmes until the late 1950s. And since that time, I've accumulated probably the best part of 2,500 programmes,
really?
Home and away. I have a special room set aside at home just for Runcorn memorabilia. I know Chris Darlington's beaten me to it in his book, but it is my intention at some point to try and pull it all together and to put it out in some kind of format that people can have a look at, because there's an awful lot of good archive stuff there, going right the way back to 1918 and the start of the club now. So no, I wish I could remember my first game. I do have one little recollection, and that's walking down there in those early days with my dad, and I thought I was actually watching England, and for quite a number of weeks I kept referring to Runcorn as England, so that's my earliest recollection. But no, I can't, I'm afraid, remember that early match at all.
This era is a time when a good non-league side really wouldn't have a chance of getting into the Football League. There was the re-election thing, wasn't there, and it always went against the non-league outfits. So you had teams coming bottom of the Football League year after year, and they never came out. And it's
Year after year after year, that involved teams like Accrington, it involved teams like Wigan trying to get in, of course, for all those years. And it was like a closed shop in many ways, that clubs weren't allowed in because their senior partners in the league, the old fourth division teams, kept them in their place in many ways. So no, they wouldn't allow them in at all, I'm afraid.
It's you talk about your archives, and it's something we've been doing on the show over the last, this is show 11, I think, the last 11 weeks. I've loved dipping into the archives, and you do have a poke around. The Times site is fantastic, and their newspaper cuttings of games from the 30s and 40s is fascinating, and I think there is room. I know I speak to Chris quite regularly, and I know his book's coming out. I think there is room for another one. It'd be something that everybody would look forward to if it could happen one day.
I'm sure it would, and because I've been involved for such a long time, you can bring your own perspective to it, I think, in many ways, and that's what I'd be looking to do, because I was brought up in a generation of people who'd remembered that great pre-war team, of course.
Yeah.
So names like Jack Search and so on were what I was brought up on, never having seen them play. And it's nice that we've still got fans at the club who do remember those players, because they're not going to be around forever. So it's nice to get those memories down while we've still got access to them, really.
We will, a bit later in the show, I'll go through some of the Linnets legends as well. I know Jack Search will definitely crop up in there, and a few others. Who were the players that were your first Runcorn heroes? Who it was about? I've got 1962 as a three seasons.
Sure,
the Cheshire League champions, and that is that the first taste of success.
It was very much the beginning of the 60s. That was the start of the successful decades in many ways. Jack Boothway arrived at the club, Manchester based. Brought in an awful lot of Manchester based players at that time as well, and that. They are my childhood memories, the teams of Foster and Moss and Cunningham. And that was why it was so nice when we set up Runcorn Linnets, of course, that two of the very early people who came along to one of the golf days were, in fact, Alan Foster and Eddie Moss. It was like meeting my childhood heroes in every sense, but 40 years on. Both still very active on the golf course. But no, they were very much my childhood heroes. And I suppose the first great event I remember wasn't actually the Cheshire League title. It was the Cheshire Senior Cup at Crewe against Hyde at the beginning of the 60s, and phenomenal numbers of coaches going there. And again, you talk about childhood memories. My childhood memories are walking up to Yates's garage and getting on the coaches there. And my recollection is, and I'm sure people will correct me if I'm wrong, but my recollection is that Runcorn took something like 70 coaches to that game that day. So a huge crowd of well over 4,000 people to watch that cup final at the beginning of the 1960s. And that was really inevitably my first memory, of course, because that was the first thing I'd seen the club win. And that was followed pretty quickly by the Cheshire League Championship as well. So I really felt the club had started to achieve things at that stage as well.
What kit are we playing in this time, Derek? Well,
this was the green and white stripes.
Green and white stripes.
Yeah,
which we associate with Northwich now, really, don't we?
But that's the kit I remember. I don't really remember the blue and white kit to any great degree. It's very much that stripe kit that I remember when I was first a fan.
The late 60s, Runcorn, a founder members of the Northern Premier League. And that changed things, I would imagine.
It did. And again, I look back in my scrapbooks, and I actually kept a scrapbook of that first season, 1968-69, and the first game was against South Shields. The crowd was 1,656.
Right.
And I looked at the conference yesterday, and an awful lot of teams didn't have those kind of crowds.
No, of course not.
In the conference. So it shows how football changed, and how television, I think, changed football in many ways. But yeah, that brought a whole new era of football for us, of course, because suddenly we were travelling well away from what had been our local teams. Mm-hmm. Although there were an awful lot of local teams still around, we suddenly started going up to the northeast, down to the Midlands and so on. And the third match, amazingly, looking back now, in that particular season, was at Wigan Athletic, and a crowd of 5,055. So Wigan were there with us at that kind of time. And we had many, many good games against those kind of teams, of course. So yeah, the Northern Prem was a whole new experience for us, and that's really when I started travelling far and wide.
Yeah,
with the club.
With it also came probably the first cup success of the modern era with the Notts County tie. Was that, what year was that?
Yeah, the Notts County tie was at the end of the 60s.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
67-68
season. Yeah, cold, snowy day. I've got a little story I can tell you about that one as well, because inevitably, that was played at Canal Street. And by that time, we'd got floodlights at the ground, of course. Mm-hmm. And another of my big connections there is that my dad was secretary of the floodlights committee. The floodlights cost about £5,000 in those days. That took an awful lot of raising over some two to 3 years. Bingo nights, barrel organs on church streets. We had everything to raise money. And eventually we got the lights up. And Notts County refused to play under the lights. They said they weren't good enough, which didn't best please my dad at the time. So those people who were there that day will probably remember we actually kicked off early, so that we didn't have to use the lights. We then got a letter from, I think it was their manager actually, I think Billy Gray was their manager at the time, and we actually got a letter after the match apologising for the way they'd thought of Runcorn Football Club, because they had thought that it was a little Mickey Mouse outfit they were coming to, and of course they lost the game. So at least they had the courtesy to get back to us and to say, sorry, you did well, you deserve to win. And yes, that was another of the great memories, of course, that 1-0 win. But I think the bigger memory is probably the one photo in my archive that I've used more often than not, and that is the sight of Phil Tyler, and many of the Runcorn fans listening today will still know Phil, who was actually standing behind the goal when Alan Ryan scored against Notts County, and the picture of his of Phil about 3 or 4 feet off the ground. He tells me he couldn't do it nowadays, but I'm sure he could if it came to it.
I'm sure if we beat Notts County in the first round of the FA Cup, Phil will be jumping up and down.
I'm sure he would.
Much as I don't want to, we have to have a quick break and play a little piece of music. I don't think we're going to fit everything in this hour that we want to talk
Absolutely.
About. We'll have to book a second half in a few weeks, I think. But indeed. Anyway, you're listening to Halton Community Radio. Mark and Tom. Tom's out in for Catherine, and we're here with Derek Greenwood, Runcorn Linnets chairman and lifelong fan. This is Carly Simon. It's a measure of today's guest, Derek Greenwood, the Runcorn Linnets chairman, that we've just talked all the way through Carly Simon, which I find quite outrageous. Never done that before. A great song. We've discussed the 60s and Runcorn's involvement in the Cheshire League, and then they moved into the inaugural Northern Premier League, which in the mid-70s, Derek, brought success.
Yeah, indeed. I suppose the second of the great Runcorn managers appeared on the scene at that time, and that was Stan Stoughton, of course. And by the mid-70s, we'd moved on and had become the champions of that league as well. So tremendous success, some tremendous players around at that time as well. But I would be almost sure that for most Runcorn fans, although that would have been the highlight of the mid-70s, there was a different dream on the horizon by that time, of course. At the beginning of the 70s, cups like the Cheshire Senior Cup, which had been the main cup competition for us to play for, had been superseded because we'd now moved on, of course, to the days where the FA Trophy had been set up. And I suppose for all of us, the dream then set in of going to Wembley one day. And in the 70s, we were there nearly three times. And I suppose heartbreak for football fans could be measured for Runcorn fans at that time in, I suspect most people would say, on points, winning every one of those six matches in the semi-finals, twice against Stafford and once against Altrincham, and each time, for some reason, losing the match, which was staggering. I didn't miss many Runcorn matches in those days, but I did actually miss the second semi-final of that against Altrincham. We'd played the first leg away from home, and as most people who know me, I was a teacher, of course, until my retirement in the summer. And I went on a school trip to Germany. It was poor organisation on my part because I hadn't checked the semi-final dates, and Runcorn were playing the second leg of the semi-final against Altrincham, and we had played so well against them in the first match at Altrincham that I had no hesitation whatsoever that when I rang up on that Saturday evening from Germany that my wife would be telling me that we were going to Wembley. And I was absolutely heartbroken to find out not only had we not won the match, but that an ex-Runcorn player had scored the goal against us, which for the third time had stopped us going to Wembley.
You got to name names.
It was Mally Bailey. It was Mally Bailey, yeah, and I'm sure, again, all those Runcorn fans listening will remember that one well. So, yeah, huge, huge disappointments. But I suppose, yes, the fact that we did have the success as Northern Premier League champions, and the dream lived on for us, of course, into the 1980s.
We'll come to that quite shortly, I would imagine. I'm going to throw a question in here because it seems quite... It's one of Mike Goodyear's questions. Sure. Who's your favourite Runcorn player of all time? How hard is that to answer?
How hard is that to answer? Yeah. I tried to look back and see how many players we've actually had over the course of the years. My first reaction always to everybody when I'm asked that question is it has to be Eddie Moss. And again, that won't surprise anybody who knows me. I suppose as the years have gone by and you look back and you think, did you have a rose-coloured view of players in those days? You probably did. It's very hard to compare different eras of football, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We all have our heroes from different eras, and it's very hard to know whether they would be such good players in the present-day era as well. But no, Eddie Moss, I suppose at that time, was regarded by all the Runcorn fans as the best player that we'd had in that era. And together with Alan Foster, of course, they scored a phenomenal number of goals together. And as I said earlier, to actually meet Eddie at the golf day a couple of years ago was a real pleasure for me. I had actually met him once before because he still lives in Skelmersdale.
Right.
And I had met Eddie once before when we'd been over to play Skem. But a charming gentleman, absolutely loved his time at Runcorn, of course. So yeah, I suppose I would have to say Eddie Moss.
You won't mind me cribbing from your notes on the Runcorn, the excellent Runcorn Linnets website. Eddie Moss played over 400 games for Runcorn and scored 130 goals. Yeah. Mike Goody is here. Let's throw it back at him. Mike, who's your favourite Runcorn player of all time?
Well, I wasn't expecting that, Mark.
I know, I like to do that, you know me. To give Derek a break as well.
Well, perhaps some of my memories don't go back...
Just tell us.
Quite into that era. But I'll go for Steve Joel.
Stevie Joel, a fabulous choice. Stevie Joel is one of the Linnets legends.
He is, yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned Stevie Joel. It's like we set it up and we didn't. I promise you we didn't. In your notes about Stevie Joel, you mention a fanzine that Runcorn used to have in the days of fanzines, the Jolly Green Giants. Have you still got any copies of the Jolly Green Giants?
I've got two copies of it. That's all. Yeah. Unfortunately, not with me today.
No, it was... A Runcorn fanzine, the first one I remember, and it was Mark from Western Point and John from Beechwood.
That's right, yeah.
I'm Mark from Western Point. And it was my idea that we got Stevie Joel falling from the halfway line into the box.
I never, ever knew that.
No. I don't know, we're going to digress, I knew we would at some point. I don't remember in that fanzine, I enjoyed the fanzine, it was never malicious, it was always good-humoured.
Sure.
And we had a comic strip. I think it was called Derek and Arthur.
Yes.
You remember that?
I do remember it, yes, yeah.
When I lived with my mum and dad in Western Point, my mum called him a funny little chap with glasses, used to post them through the door, and we never knew who drew Derek and Arthur. And I'm going to reveal it today for the first time. I'm sure he won't mind. If he does, let me know. Guess who drew that?
No idea.
Timmy Rutter.
Did he really?
He really did, yeah. It was years before we found out who'd drawn Derek and Arthur.
Yeah.
And it was Tim Rutter was a...
It's interesting there that you mentioned people like Timmy Rutter, because I suppose that's been another big change over the years, that in those early years, we tended always to have local lads playing as well,
yeah,
of course. Right the way back from Brian Pendlebury through people like Timmy and Derek Baker and so on. And that's something I'm sure the fans would like to get back to in due course. We've got Runcorn lads like Jay with us at the moment, of course, but it would be really nice to get a fair representation from the town playing in Runcorn Linnets as well, of course.
We're going to move on. I don't know, can we call them the glory years?
Yeah.
In the early, the late 80s and early 90s, Runcorn made it to Wembley three times. 85 to 86, we lost to Altrincham.
Yep.
My memories, this is when I start having real good memories of that day, and it was, like you say, that devastating to get all that way and not to win, but what an incredible day out for the fans. And in the days of terracing at Wembley, there was no seats, we were all stood behind the goal.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a day that'll live with me forever. It was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's probably true for most Runcorn fans. That had been the dream right the way through the 70s. That had been the dream for us for 15 years, best part of 15 years. And it followed on, of course, from a period when the club had Jim McAleog managing.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't get more high-profile players, I suppose, than the next Manchester United players coming to manage a team like Runcorn. But McAleog had brought no success at all. Seemed, from my recollection, to have spent an awful lot of money bringing all kinds of players to the club, but actually hadn't achieved any success. And success was almost instant. The second Johnny Williams arrived, we saw a different kind of team altogether. To bring in players like Ozzie Smith and Bobby Fraser and Stevie Joel, who we've already mentioned, which was the nucleus of a side in many ways he'd had already with him at Winsford, as many managers did in those days. They mm-hmm. brought their players with them to some degree.
And still do.
And it was almost instant success from the outset with John Williams. He just seemed to know what was required at that level of football to get the success that the Runcorn fans so craved. And that first full season that John was with us, if my recollection serves me right, I think he joined us towards the end of one season. We played at Main Road that season and won the League Cup. And we went on at that point to win the Northern Premier League.
Was that against Marine at Main Road?
Yes, we played against Marine at Main Road.
My first game.
Yeah.
I remember that so
And again, fantastic moments for us as fans, because we were suddenly starting to really win things. So having won the Northern Prem already under Stan Staughton in the mid-70s, we then won it again under John at the beginning of the 80s.
80-81.
And then suddenly there we were in the conference, because by that time the conference, as it is now, had been set up, went through various names, the Alliance League, the Gola League, in those early days as well. And beyond all our wildest dreams, of course, having won the NPL one year, we then went on and won the conference the following year.
There's no better, when you put on a national stage like that, there's no better way of introducing yourself than by going and win it, and that's exactly what Runcorn did.
Absolutely, yeah. And I suppose when you do talk about looking back at recollections, that has to be one of those that's right up there with the very best, because to have achieved that, I don't suppose any of us ever regarded Runcorn as one of the grandiose clubs. Of course, we were suddenly coming up against quite wealthy southern teams at that point as well, but what we did feel is that the northern teams at that point had an awful lot of grit, and that was very, very true. That team that John Williams produced, an absolutely fantastic team in every sense, and then to go on and win that was just absolutely amazing. But it didn't stop there, of course, because John then went on and took us to Wembley, and personally I will always be very, very grateful to him for that moment, because like you, it's a bit of a blur now, really. And it wasn't a huge crowd for that first Wembley performance. I think we had something like 15,000 there. But to us, it was
the great day of our footballing lives.
The game is certainly is gone. Yes. I can't remember any of the action, but I can remember after the game, the players came down to salute the Runcorn fans behind the goal.
Yeah.
And I'd made a Viking hat with yellow hair.
Yes.
And I put it over the fence, and John Imrie wore it. And his picture was on the front page of the Weekly News wearing my hat. And if you ask me the question, he's always my favourite Linnet player now because John Imrie wore my
hat. You wore the hats, yeah.
But the game's a blur. I just can't recall it.
No, but they're the moments, aren't they? And I think my first recollection was stopping off at the services on the way down to the match and the huge number of Runcorn fans already there at the services. And I thought, my God, there are people I've not seen here for years and years. And they turned out for that one moments. It was, in some ways, it was a bit of an anticlimax, and one of the great games I remember was really that semi-final, because we'd had a lead-up, if you remember, into that match, and again, this is the Kettering match, but I brought the whole setup here, because when we came back from Wembley, I actually put together all the programmes from that particular era, and we'd played Kidderminster in the quarterfinals, and again, I'm sure there are lots of Runcorn fans who went there that day.
2-1.
2-1. But they actually had their scarves with Wembley printed on already done at Kidderminster that day. So that was the level of optimism they had on that
day. As a quick digress, that reminds me of a Cheshire Cup final. Did we play Macclesfield? And they were going to Wembley. And we played them in the Cheshire Cine Cup final, and we really burst their bubble. There were millions of them, all with the Wembley memorabilia.
Yeah, absolutely.
And went there and beat them.
Just the same at Kidderminster, and exactly the same with Kettering. I remember walking off Canal Street after the first leg, followed by a couple of Kettering fans who were delighted they'd achieved 0-0.
Yeah.
And I said, you don't know this team.
No.
I said, 0-0 here hasn't been a particularly good result for you. I said, we're just as likely to come and stop you scoring again in the next match. And that's exactly what we did. So I think looking back, although the Wembley game is a blur, the Kettering game certainly isn't, because I remember driving up on the coach that day. And for those people who've been to Kettering, there's a huge stand all the way down one side. And all their fans came to one end of that stand to greet us. I'll say to greet us in their own inimitable fashion. And there were probably 200-300 Runcorn fans. We were down at one end of the pitch behind the goals at Kettering. And when those two goals went in, I suppose that was the moment we thought, we've actually done it after all these years. We've done it, we're there. And that was one of the great memories, of course, of watching the Linnets.
Runcorn were famously going to go to Wembley twice more in the early 90s, but in between those two periods of Wembley success, Runcorn had an incredible run of FA Cup success.
Yeah.
And it looks, if I've got this right, it looks like they got to the second or first round about seven seasons on the trot.
Yeah.
Some of those games, nobody turned them over. The teams that they eventually lost to, league teams, it was always 1-0.
Yeah.
And nobody really beat Runcorn heavily.
No.
I've got here Wigan, Scunthorpe, Stockport after beating Chester, Crewe after beating Wrexham, Hartlepool, Tranmere.
Yeah, and that Scunthorpe game stands out particularly because we outplayed Scunthorpe that day at Scunthorpe and lost in the last 5-6 minutes to a free kick, which I would say, of course, wouldn't I, that it was never a free kick as long as I live. But I think the great disappointment there was that being that close to a 0-0 draw, I don't know whether you recollect who we would have played, but the draw came out. It was actually made, at that time when the draw was actually made, I think, on the Saturday night on the way home, and out of the hat, Scunthorpe drew Spurs.
That's right, I remember that. I remember that was my first dalliance with a police escort, that the police guided the travel coach in to the ground.
That's right. Yeah.
Full of kids and 70-year-old ladies who'd never seen anything like it. It was frightening for the first time I'd ever seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Scunthorpe away. That was in the Scunthorpe's period of Ian Botham, wasn't it? And
that's
it was
right.
The Botham bar, the Botham stand, Botham pies.
Everything was there, No, that's absolutely true.
I went into the local bookies to try and get a bet on before the game, to get a bet on Runcorn to beat them.
It's not
a wise decision.
It's interesting because the list you've given me here is almost exactly the same as I've got on mine. And the big one for me, of course, coming from where I did, living and working where I did, was the Burnley match right at the beginning of the 80s. And I remember going down on my knees at Burnley when Steve Joyle was through on goal. And you knew what Joyle was going to do. And he did. He put the ball wide. And they came back and won the replay
2-1, of course, because that would have been street cred from my point of view for probably the rest of my time up in East Lancs.
Two fantastic games of football against Burnley.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic games, yeah.
My dad, in his wisdom, I hope he's listening, your dad if you are, decided that he was going to accompany me to the replay, the Burnley replay, because he thought it was going to be a bit tasty, basically. And he was a rugby man. He is a rugby man. He's not a massive football fan. So he took me down to Canal Street. I've been used to be going on my own for years.
Sure.
I took me in the wrong side, and we ended up stood with the Burnley fans. And it's just like an absolute nightmare. But I remember that. I remember Ben Seddon going up like a salmon and putting that goal. Yeah, and that was fabulous.
Yeah, definitely.
Chester away was...
Chester away, yeah, game.
It seemed like we had about 10,000 fans behind that goal. Yeah. It was chock-a-block.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And lots of great photos after that match as well.
I was lucky after that match. There was a bit of trouble after that game as well. They didn't take to being beaten at home in the cup by a non-league side at all. And as I walked out, at the time I lived in Preston, and I went on my own on the train to these games. And on the way out the ground, I felt this big hand on my shoulder and looked around for a big burly copper. "What are you doing, sunshine?" "I'm going for the train, mate." Really panicking. "Come with me then." And he didn't want to get involved in anything. He took me all around all the back streets and walked me on my own space, because he didn't get involved in anything either.
No.
And so who got injured that game? There was a bad injury that game, wasn't there?
There was. There was a broken leg. Was it Dom Page?
I
think it was Dom Page, if I remember rightly. Yeah.
Following season, Wrexham away was another, after beating Crewe,
I'll show you the notes I've got in front of me, Mark, because you'll notice I've highlighted in red the Wrexham game. I mean, you know, I drive down, it's about a 130-mile round trip I do down here to Runcorn for home matches. And I remember that night after the replay, I got out of my car at home, so I must have driven best part of, I don't know, 90-100 miles home, and I was still trembling when I got out of the car. I couldn't believe what I'd just seen that night, because Wrexham, of course, themselves had this huge reputation as giant killers in the FA Cup, beating a lot of First Division Premier League teams in those days. So to go there and to win in the way we did was just absolutely fantastic. And again, I've got some fantastic photos in my archives of people like Kingy, and I'm sure a lot of people remember Kingy halfway up the wire fence, of course.
That's
because
right.
Of course we were fenced off in those days. We were penned in at that one end, but that was just the most magnificent football night that you could ever experience as a football
again,
fan.
My memory of that game is from outside of the ground. We all piled into this car to go home after the game, and the result came through on Radio 2.
Yes.
That was chaos. And I thought the car was going to fall to pieces.
But they are... You go through all the dark times of being a football fan, because there are lots and lots of bad times.
We've got them to come.
And we've got those to come, yeah. But, of course, I suppose you put all those behind you for nights like that, and for those Wembley appearances, for all those cup finals, for all those league titles, because that's what football is. It's not about constant success. It's never been about constant success. It's just about those fantastic moments when you do get results like that, and even more so for non-league teams against, in our eyes, the bigger league teams. And that, again, was just one of the most fantastic memories I'll ever have.
The Wrexham one.
The Wrexham away.
I can't decide there's that many good. We will go on to the other two Wembley appearances, and then I promise we'll play some music. The 93 final, Wickham, that just never happened really for Runcorn, did it?
No, it didn't in some way. I mean, they were a hugely strong team, of course, at that time.
30,000 fans in the stadium.
Yeah, I mean, 30-odd thousand fans. We felt absolutely swamped almost from the moment we got there in many ways. I always felt the 4-1 probably flattered them at the time, but when you looked at where some of those players went on to play, and of course Martin O'Neill as manager, the start of what's been a hugely successful managerial career for him, then in many ways I suppose we were huge underdogs. But I suppose there was always that feeling with the Wembley appearances that sometimes it was just the occasion, and we never quite got that kind of team that felt we are going here to win. Although the following season, of course, could not have been closer.
You talk about you have to have the good times to get to the bad times. I mean, that was the worst one for me, the Woking game. That was the most disappointing.
Yes, it was for all of us.
But if we hadn't got there, we wouldn't have had the day that we had at Guiseley, which is just absolutely...
Yes.
Will live forever with me. It's just a great day out. And I remember Again, all my memories seem to be outside the ground for some reason, why that is. We went into a local pub after the game, and in there there was Runcorn fans, Guiseley fans, and it was Leeds United football fans, rugby fans, Bradford rugby fans. Yeah. It was a melting pot of sporting people. What a great few hours we had in there. There was no trouble. It was...
No.
Ken McKenna.
Yeah, it was just a fantastic day out again, wasn't it?
We scored like on, and they stood there and applauded at the end, and I could never...
No.
The grace in which they took that, I could never get my head around that.
That would have been a huge disappointment for us, because I think that was the time we'd been away from Canal Street as well, of course, hadn't it? We had to play the first leg at Chester. That's right, and they played well against us. They looked like a strong team.
Gary Brabin didn't help.
Gary Brabin sometimes didn't help, did he?
Oh, my memories of him are fond ones.
Well, I think they are of all of us.
And much as I don't want to do it, we've got to play a song just to break this up. Give Derek a chance to catch his breath, have a quick cup of tea. This one seems appropriate. It's David Bowie and Heroes. Sorry, David, you've had enough time on the show. I'd rather be talking to Derek than listening to David Bowie, I think. A couple of things to tie up. Name the year in the first part of the programme. Well done to Glyn. And was it Dorothy?
Yes.
1938. Great to play Ella Fitzgerald on the radio. It doesn't often happen. Apart from on Frank Ames's jazz show on Thursday nights on HCR. Glyn's emailed in again, and he'd asked us to say a big hello to Walter, who's in Croftwood in 81 listening to the show. Thanks for listening, Walter. I hope you're enjoying our little trip down memory lane with Runcorn FC. Glyn's also given us... If Tom can get it on the screen for me, because I can't do it, I've just dropped the mouse. His own memory of the Wembley trips. This is going well.
Sorry.
That's the one. His memory is Mike, him and Paul Rafferty having breakfast in the old Pinewood Studios, which was took over by Asda, a 5,000-seater restaurant. And there's three Runcorn fans having breakfast in there, and the lady dishing out the breakfasts thought that they were foreign, never heard of Runcorn.
Can I just add something there? Because one of the things we've forgotten, of course, at that time is that not only was the 80s, I suppose, the glory years, but it was that time that the Travel Club started. And again, you know, I look back to people like Keith and Betty Ash, who were heavily involved in that, but that was very much the time my own son became involved. Probably the strangest story of all is Neil, in the sense that he's got no other connection with Runcorn other than the fact that I was born and brought up here. He's never spent any of his life living in the town, but like father, like son, became a Runcorn fan, and he travels down from Leeds nowadays. But when we used to go on the Travel Club, and I'm talking about when he was perhaps 3-4 years of age and travelling all over the country in those days, of course, to places like Weymouth and Dover and Maidstone. The way I kept him happy was to take a big box of Lego, and he used to kneel up most of the way and build with his Lego blocks all the way down and all the way back. And used to love the bingo. I couldn't let a session like this go, could I, without, for all those people who used to travel on the Travel Club, mentioning the bingo and Wilf Bettley. Wilf was Neil's favourite purely because of the bingo and the fact that Wilf seemed to have a calling style different from anybody else we'd ever met. But we used to really love those times on the Travel Club up and down the country. And again, absolutely fantastic memories. And still fantastic from those kind of times, of course, that people like Joyce Carter, Spike's mum, still attend matches. Huge friend of the Becklers, of course. But the fact that I think Joyce still feels something for the club after all those years, and I'm sure that started way back in the 80s with the Travel Club, when it really was one big family, of course, for us all.
Of course, it's a scaled down Travel Club now.
But it's still going, and I'm sure at some point in the future we'll get back there.
We field a couple of questions, I think, because we're obviously going to run out of time. What we generally do at this time is lock the doors of the studio so no one can get in, and we're going to take over the airwaves for half an hour, I think. This is from Robbie. Doesn't say where he is. You will, of course, have been to Wembley with the club 3 times. Is there a chance we can do it again in the FA Vars?
Yes, I see no reason why not at all. Again, when you look back to some of those early starts in the trophy, the one we were talking about earlier, the very first one, Altrincham, we went down to Windsor right at the outset there. didn't play particularly well, came away with a late goal. And that's how cut run starts. You look match to match. You don't look back at what you've achieved. You always look match to match. And yeah, you can look back at where we've got already this season in terms of the main road. Hugely lucky, I suppose, in their eyes, for us to get back to a replay. And then to go a goal down in the replay and still come back and win it again. It's moments like that where teams suddenly start to get a feel that, yeah, perhaps this is their year. But that happens to an awful lot of teams for an awful lot of years, of course, before you get there. But yeah, I see absolutely no reason why we can't do that. But it's a long road and you need a little bit of luck going your way. But no, it'll be interesting to see how far the team can get this year.
We've jumped to the here and now. Let's quickly recap how we came about, because Runcorn Linnets now is a different club. It's a fans club, a fans run club, brought about by the demise of the old club. Can you just briefly, briefly sum up how we came about this situation?
Yeah. I don't know. You look back at those days, and I suppose with hindsight, it's great to look back and think, yeah, we can now see how it happened, but it's happened in a way that none of us saw coming at the time, I suppose. This great, glorious decade of the 1980s. And then that very strange change of managers after we'd been to Wembley when we swapped managers with Altrincham, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And John King came for the season and we all wondered what was going on. And I think I'm right in saying that John Williams didn't achieve that level of success at Altrincham at all. And I'm sure John told me it was the only time in the whole of his managerial career he was actually sacked from a job, because he'd had huge success wherever he'd been, of course. And then suddenly we were into the 90s and still two more Wembley appearances to come. But on the back of that, of course, I've written down here wind, fire and wall. The wind blew one of the stands over, of course. We then had the fire in the main stand. And then, of course, thanks to the Hull fans, we had an FA Cup match, which hit national headlines because of the wall being pushed down and the mayhem they created.
You've got a title for your book now, anyway.
I've got a title for my book now. Yeah, you're probably right. So I suppose for us, and the fact that we then ended up having to play out of the town, I'm hugely grateful, even in those days, to the people at Witten and the odd games at Chester that we played. What people have to remember, of course, is that the old club was a limited company. And it was, in many ways, run by its directors and its major shareholders. And the debts were obviously beginning to pile up at that time. Some of you will remember that we tried very hard to keep the club in Runcorn. We set up an organisation which we called Runcorn First. And we had one or two very vociferous meetings down at the canal side in those days and tried very hard to keep the club in its roots. But, of course, by the end of the decade, the decision by the chairman at that point had been made to move the club over the water to Widnes. And I can fully understand why many fans were hugely disgruntled at that at the time. Many fans said they would never go and watch the club play while they were over the water.
I didn't. I've got to say, I was one of those that I wouldn't.
And you weren't alone. You weren't alone. And I wouldn't blame anybody for that kind of
Looking
decision.
Back now, it does seem quite childish to take that view. But at the time, for me, it seemed the right view.
I suppose I had to think hard and long, and I thought, no, it's still my club. It's still my team. Yeah, they're playing there, but I suppose I still always, at the back of my mind, had that hope that at one point in the future they would come back to play in the town. So yeah, I stuck with it. It was obviously never going to be successful.
No.
In many ways, Widnes is a rugby stronghold, we all know that. And then of course it went from bad to worse as we moved out even farther away from the town to Prescott, and they were very sad times for us in every sense. And the last 2 years were, for the Runcorn fans that were left at that time, were almost unbearable in every sense, in that we could see there was no club there. It was just a shell in every sense, and it was in total freefall. And but for the likes of Alan Jones, who was secretary at that point, the club would have died long before it did. But the final part of it, and again, some people may not be aware of how Runcorn Linnets did come about. I was asked to attend, with a number of others, by Alan, a meeting with the then chairman of the club at the end of
the season, which would be 2005-2006 season. And he told us there was no more money to put into the club.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, we had a choice. Inevitably, we asked to see what the state of the finances actually was, whether, you know, there was any point in trying to get money back into the club, because we'd tried, we'd had a share issue, we'd raised some money for the club, but we couldn't ever get a straight answer to what amount of money was owed at that time, I'm afraid. And that was when we then decided we had probably very little option but to try and set up a new club.
Mm-hmm.
I personally didn't know at that time whether the people of Runcorn wanted a football club or not. I had really no idea. And therefore, the only way to see whether there was any appetite for that at all was to go to a fans meeting, which we did, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of April the 28th, which amazingly was my dad's birthday. And we had the public meeting. There seemed to be a groundswell of opinion at that meeting that we should give it a go. I don't think any of us knew at that point what on earth we were taking on to try and set a club up from absolute scratch. And we said we would give it a go. And from that point on, we did give it a go. And, well, it's been successful, I think, so far.
Absolutely, no doubt about that. We just had the great news that we've been granted a stay of execution. We're going to have another 20 minutes or so with Derek after the news. After the news, what we'll do is we'll concentrate on the new club, the Linnets Club, what we've achieved so far and where we're going. We'll play some music up to the news. Derek, it's really enjoyable, this. You okay, Tom?
I'm fine, yeah.
Well, we'll play a bit of music then, and we'll crack on after the news. This is Mark and Tom with Derek Greenwood and producer Mike in the background, talking Runcorn FC on Halton Community Radio. It is just gone 6 o'clock, and you're listening to Halton Community Radio, a very special Sunday sports show this afternoon. It's extended for a short while we speak with Linnets chairman Derek Greenwood. Thanks for joining us, Derek. It's been fabulous so far. Everybody's enjoying it, I know that from the emails we've had in. We're going to take the timeline very much up to the here and now. The Linnets are reborn as a club, with your good self at the helm and a lot of other fabulous volunteers who are still doing, a great job. How much of a struggle was it to get that first side out? I know about your meetings with the North West Counties.
Yeah,
and things.
More of a struggle than anybody will ever know, I think, in many ways. I suppose it was only when I left that meeting at the end of April and thought, my goodness, what on earth have we done now? That it was about organisational things. The season started beginning of August, and here we were, end of April, no team, no manager, no ground, no nothing. And at that point, we started with a pretty wide group of people, really. We met every week during that summer up at the castle in Halton, not too far away from where we are now. And bit by bit, we started to get some organisational things put in place. It was a very large committee group that started it all rolling in the first place. And looking back, probably, I think most of the people will accept it was probably too large a group. I think at that point you need a relatively small group of people to get things done and to get things moving. But I was hugely grateful for the number of people who did stay involved at that particular time, up until the point where we could get proper elections in place and a proper organised group at that point. I have to say it had never been my intention to want or desire to chair the whole thing at that time, because I just felt from a distance I wouldn't be the best person necessarily to want to do that. And of course it was Stuart White who started the ball rolling. I asked Stuart if he wouldn't mind chairing the whole thing, and Stuart did for that first period chair the whole setup. But yeah, it was about a summer of meetings. We came down to St. Helens to meet with the league committee, many of whom we know very well now, of course, because they'd no idea who we were. They didn't know whether we were going to be able to deliver what we were saying. But we needed them on side because, of course, we needed a lead to play in. And strictly speaking, the club should have had to start at an even lower stage than it did at level six of the pyramid. So in that sense, it was a summer of getting all those things in place. So most of it was organisational. Steve Carragher, of course, was a very quick appointment there. Steve had been with us at the end of the FC Halton saga, and Steve agreed to stay on and to manage it. We had no idea in terms of budgets what we could realistically raise. The fans were absolutely fantastic in those first few weeks, and the hundreds of pounds turned into thousands of pounds very quickly. And we tried to get as many people on board, but we were really just making a huge leap into the unknown, I suppose, in the instance. But the first big breakthrough came then in June of 2006 when Stuart and I went off to Buxton to the league AGM, and the North West Counties League, the Vodcat League as it is now, accepted us in. And we were hugely grateful for that in every sense. Witten, of course, had come in and offered us a ground to play at. And again, I just want to put on record my huge thanks, my personal thanks to Mike Worthington, who was chair at Witten at that point, and to his board of directors there, because without that offer, we wouldn't have had a ground to play at. Had we had anywhere in Runcorn with the facilities at that point, we would have been here straight away in the town. But there was nowhere to play, and we had to find somewhere pretty quickly, because, of course, the league needed that reassurance before they would put us into the league in the first place. So that was the background to it. And I suppose, as the saying goes, the rest was history. I suppose, realistically, I was just so happy in August to have a team to go and watch again, that probably was enough for me at that early stage of the development. But as the season started to progress and we realised that the kinds of players Steve had managed to bring in, mainly Liverpool-based players, a lot of them playing good level of Sunday League football as well, then we suddenly started to realise that we were in fact going to do pretty well in that league. And so it turned out, and I suppose it was only one result during the season, the results, well, two results, the results against Winsford that stopped us actually winning the league in that first season. So I suppose that was beyond our wildest dreams. To actually get promotion in that first season was way, way beyond what any of us expected. We'd have all quite happily settled, I suppose, at that time for a period of consolidation, just to get the team re-established in some kind of format. So to get that kind of promotion in the first season was tremendous, and that to be followed up by what was a hugely enjoyable presentation evening as well, made everything seem worthwhile to us at that point.
That's brilliant. The period of consolidation probably came a bit later than you expected in the second season.
It did, and strangely enough, a lot of the players who were around us at that point said, you'll have no problem, this team is good enough to go through and to do just as well in the top division. But it wasn't long, I think, before we all saw that that probably wasn't the case. That you have to accept that every level of football you move up into, you need players who are used to playing at a slightly higher level of football. And although we did okay, we had an okay season, it was no more than that. But the expectation was there, I think, perhaps from the fans as well, in many ways, that we would do better than we did. But no, you're right, I think that has to be seen as a period of consolidation. And there were some disappointments along the way, no two ways about it, I'm afraid. And I suppose the huge disappointment that led to the decision to change the management team came at Glossop, at the back end of the year, when we really didn't have a team out of any great quality at Glossop that day. And for all kinds of reasons, we'd been hugely supportive of what Steve and Mark had done, and indeed still are hugely supportive of what they'd done for us in that birth of the club. But it was becoming increasingly obvious that we probably needed a change of direction to take us to the next level. And we had two choices to make at that point, really, and it was a hard decision for us just after Christmas. And we agonised over it hard and long. But at the end of the day, we had a decision to make as to whether or not we kept with it for the rest of the season and see how we went, or whether we made the change then to bring a new management team in and to see whether that would give chance to look at what we got, assess all that, and then try and progress again in this coming season. And that was the decision we finally made. And it was a very amicable parting of the ways. Tony Waddington and myself met with Steve and with Mark Phillips, and it was a sad moment for all of us, of course, in that sense, but I think it was a move that we felt at that stage we had to make. And of course, we've now brought in Steve Wilkes, who I know has been in this seat already.
He has.
Proved to be a hugely popular manager already with the fans, and certainly some of the players he's brought in, I'm sure will become some of the first Linnets legends. But again, it's as in all of these things, we've said all the way through this that the club first and foremost has to be sustainable. We will not get another go at this. The old club went bankrupt in every sense. We cannot ever afford to do that, and we're not going to push the boat out at any point to break the bank to make sure that we get promotion or to win this cup or to win that competition. Steve understood that when he came in, and we were confident with the kind of budgets he'd worked with in his previous existence at Darwin and at Padiham, that he was the right man for the job. His connections in the game are wide-ranging, and the charisma of the man is there for all to see, of course, and we need somebody who'll move it forward. But we have to be patient. It's not going to happen overnight. No football team's built overnight. We have to be patient, and I'm sure, given the right blowing of the wind and so on, we will get there in due course with Steve. And
that answers a question that's come in from a person who hasn't put their name, unfortunately.
Right.
We've got a great manager in Steve Wilkes. How lucky are we to have him? I think you've answered that.
Mm. Yeah, I think we're hugely, hugely lucky to have him on board. And it's apparent that Steve lives for the game in every sense, but it's also the contacts he brings with him in the sense of his knowledge of the players within the area that we need. I suppose traditionally Runcorn teams over the years, after the Boothway era of the '60s, were traditionally always Liverpool based teams.
Yeah.
And that's, I suppose, has limited the club to some degree with players from that area. And that's not to say that those players haven't brought us huge success, because they did in the '80s, in the '70s and the '80s, undoubtedly. But it's just meant that Steve's trawled a slightly different area for us as well. And his knowledge of the non-league game is just so wide ranging. But it's the sheer enthusiasm of the bloke as well. And you've got to have that around a club like ours. We want somebody who's going to make things happen. The footballing side of things is his. We don't play any part in that at all. That's his. He runs the footballing side of things. He keeps us informed of what he's doing, obviously, but that's his. He'll stand and fall by what he puts out on the field at the end of the day.
His enthusiasm certainly came across when he was sat here with us. I think he gets the people around him with that enthusiasm, and I know I think the fans are really fond of him already. So they took him to his heart. His knowledge of non-league football is good.
And that's vital.
So receptive to answering questions on the day of the game, and he'll come and have a chat with you after the match. And it's from a fan's perspective, it's even the players too.
But that's
picked that up. It's a great feeling as a fan to know that
correct.
You can chat with the players and you can ask the manager a question.
And that's the difference at our level of football to what people who go and watch Premiership teams see. It is a different level of football. The fans do want to feel part of the whole thing. But I don't want to let this moment go as well in talking about the rebirth of the club without paying due respect to all those people who are involved in this. Although, in many ways, I've been the front man in this for the last couple of years. It would have been an impossible task. The people on the board, the work that goes on behind the scenes is just absolutely phenomenal, right the way across the board. Anybody who's been a secretary of any organisation knows that that's the toughest job in any organisation. It's just as true. And some of the things that both Tony, as the original secretary, and now Lynn have to organise and have to get prepared for us, takes an awful lot of their time up. These people are giving their time willingly, we forget that. And it goes right across the board to organising training sessions, to getting the kit washed. All of those things go into running a football club. And I'd just like to pay my respects to all of those people, because it's very easy to put yourself up there to be shot at, in many ways.
And I think the fans, the true fans, I think, have understood what that group of people have really brought to bear. They really have done an awful lot. You only have to look at the quality of the website we've got. Mm-hmm. And to have that kind of quality within the club is just tremendous. But it's not just the people whose public face is there. An awful lot of people do things which they don't want praising for. They just get on, they just do the jobs, and it all happens. And it's all about what then happens on the pitch on a Saturday. We're all Runcorn fans, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to be the chairman of a football club. I'd quite happily turn up at 2:45 on a Saturday and go home again after the match. But there was an element of selfishness in this. I still wanted to watch my team. It's been my team, just as it's been your team and all those other people's teams, for very, very many years. And I think that's what we didn't want to lose. We wanted a Runcorn team back in the town, playing at a good standard of football. That's what we wanted. We didn't want to let the history go.
It's a shame that we can't mention all those people by names, because there's a fair few of them, but
yeah,
I think the people involved should realise that it is appreciated from the people that go week in, week out and watch the team and support the team. Like you say, it's a shame we can't mention them all.
Yeah, it is.
They know who they are.
They do, and in every sense, they are the people who are making this happen. Mm-hmm. I'm only the mouthpiece for all this. They are the people who make this happen day in, day out. It's no kidding at times to say that sometimes we'll exchange 20, 30 emails in a day, because we do meet regularly. We meet every 3 to 4 weeks as a board down in the town somewhere, just to make sure things are on track and things are going, because part of this is the strategic planning of the club, where we've got to be, and it's every step of the way we've tried to put together longer term plans to see where we want to go, and where we want to be in 3 years time, 5 years time, and so on.
Of course, it's not just the officials. Everyone's playing the part. I think the fans have been great in the last few weeks. They certainly, I know it was Wilkes's rally call to say, come on, it get was. Behind them, but it seems to have worked, doesn't it?
It was. It seems to have worked. There's an atmosphere around the ground again, and for all those people who remember Canal Street, that's what made Canal Street what it was.
Yeah.
Canal Street had an atmosphere. Canal Street was a ground where other teams didn't like to come and play because of the slope, because it was a bit windy and it was a bit wet sometimes, and it wasn't a welcoming place to teams from down south to come and play, and we turned many teams over there on the back of that kind of fan support. And I don't know if it was you yourself, Mark, but I remember somebody said that one of his best signings, of course, has been Cunny's dad this year.
It was me. I'll tell you that one.
And I know that's gone.
He got man of the match yesterday.
Which is no great surprise. There was probably nobody else up for it yesterday.
He's a legend, there's no doubt.
On the back of that.
But again, that's what we're saying. There's a togetherness I feel at the moment. That I don't think there's any us and them anymore. I think everybody seems to be in this together at the moment.
And I think that's what we'd all want. That's what we all wanted right from the outset, and that's what we all want to be. There are bound to be some people in this who are always more prominent than others, who get quoted in the newspapers or get the photograph doing this, but it's not about that. It's never been about that. It's about getting the club back into the town, getting the club at a level of play which is sustainable, and making sure that we all pull together to do that. But of course, we've got to remember we're working on two levels. As well as the pure operational side, we've got the ground side of it as well. And I think that's pretty well documented as to where we are with that in every sense. The lease deal is there, ready to be drawn up whenever we choose to draw it up now at Riverside College. A lot of people felt perhaps that was a little bit slow going, but of course it wasn't under our control. You know, we had to go through the right processes, and we had to wait for the governors at Riverside College to give agreement to that. So that's well underway. The ground fund has been launched, and successfully launched, I have to say, over 6 months. Mm-hmm. We've continued having fruitful discussions with the council about getting the club back in the town as quickly as possible as well. We've worked with the FA all the way through this. Even up to yesterday, we were still talking with Jeff Wilkinson at Northwest Counties about the ground requirements, to make sure we were fully up to date with what those requirements were. Many of the people listening will have seen the glossy brochure that went out. That went out to over 30 companies in the town, and we are beginning to see the fruits of that. We're getting some support. So in every sense, we have got the right people on board in this, in terms of supporting us and our aims. But as in all these things, I have to keep coming back to that word patience. It is about patience. We are going in the right direction, and in due course, we will make it happen. We will make it happen. We want the club to be back in Runcorn just as much as the fans do, but we just have to be patient. We have to make sure we've got all the right funding in place before this can happen. We have to keep it sustainable, and then we can all enjoy that great moment when we do get the whole thing back up into the town.
I think it's so important for the fans to realise that the club has to be financially sound before we do this, and there's no point rushing back and folding it. Like you've said it a few times, and I'll pick up on it again. Yeah. This is our last chance.
It is.
It's got to be done properly.
It's the only other chance we're going to get, and we want to build on solid foundations this time. There's no good rushing and getting two or three promotions and finding out we're back at a level that we cannot sustain. Right. The days of huge crowds in football have long gone, I'm afraid, at the level of football we're talking about. But there are still specific requirements for the level that we've got to play at, in terms of requirements for the ground, and we've got to get those right. And you're quite right, if we went headlong into this and suddenly found ourselves out of our depth again, then we just start spiraling downwards again, and that isn't what it's about. We've got to go steadily. We want season by season improvement. That's not to say we're not ambitious, because in every sense we are ambitious, but we're not going to walk back up to the Conference. And I think all true Runcorn fans know that the Conference is miles and miles away from where it was when the Linnets came out. We had 15 years there, and even then, in terms of crowds and so on, we were one of the poorer supported teams, and perhaps that was the reason for the demise of the old club in many ways. Perhaps we were trying to sustain something that was almost unsustainable at times at that kind of level of football. But nevertheless, if we build it on firm foundations, then it gives the future generation something to build on. And I think that's what we want to do, and that's what we intend doing at the moment. But we want to take people with us in that. And you're right, the nice part of this season for me is that there has been that real evidence that the fans have really got on board with this, and I just like to openly encourage as many more to come along as possible, of course, because the easiest way we can raise money is by people coming through the gates, and especially with the VARs coming up and the match away at Alsager. It's just so nice, you know, to bring a friend along, to bring somebody who's not been to a match before, and I'm sure they'll enjoy it. I'm sure they'll enjoy the experience.
We're going to come back after a song and tie up the last few questions with Derek. We appreciate him staying over his allotted time, and we've got to get him home at some point tonight. We could talk all night, I know, about that. We're chatting with Derek Greenwood, Runcorn Linnets, lifelong fan and chairman. We're just going to throw a few of the last questions that people have gladly emailed in at Derek, and then we're going to let him get on his way on that long journey home. Derek, how much of your week is taken up with your duties as the club chairman? That's from Steve, sorry, by the way.
Yeah, it's hard to say in many ways, because part of what I do on a weekly basis, of course, is to produce the programme. And that revolves around three of us, really, in terms of Steve Pritchard setting it all up and Paul Ramsden printing the whole thing off for us. That can take anything up to 4 or 5 hours just to produce the programme. Mm-hmm. We're a bit irritated every year that we don't win the prize at North West Counties for it, but nobody's ever told us the criteria. If somebody has told us the criteria, then we'd make a better job of it and try and win the prize for it as well. But we hope it's a good read for people. But in every sense, if people, you know, feel there's something else they want in there, then to do that. So I suppose, I mean, before I retired in the summer, most of what I had to do, I fit into the evenings and I fit into weekends, but now I can spend part of every day of the week doing something for the club, mm-hmm. Whatever it takes in terms of meetings and so on. I travel down on quite a regular basis to meet up with various organisations in terms of the ground and the new ground application and so on. So it's a difficult question to answer, but a lot. my wife says too much most of the time.
I like this one because it's from Mark in Widnes, which is nice to get somebody from Widnes asking the question. How far up the non-league pyramid of football can Runcorn progress, and what's your personal ambition in this respect?
I don't think there's any limits. I think the whole purpose of the pyramid was exactly what we've said all the way through the interview, that it is about clubs getting to a level that they themselves can sustain. And it will be dependent not on what we do, but on what the town itself wants to sustain. If the fans come along in large numbers, then there's no limit to how far the club can go at all. And I think Runcorn can do that. I think Runcorn can easily sustain a team at the very highest level of non-league football, but it is a very, very long way back. You have to remember that the conference is now almost predominantly full-time football teams. That needs an awful lot of financial commitment to get there. And I suppose realistically, we've got to look in the first instance at every level as it comes. But as you said earlier, Mark, it's about doing that at a rate that we can sustain. Mm-hmm. And I mean financially sustain, of course, because running football clubs doesn't come cheap, even at this level.
Catherine, the co-host, you've not met yet. You will one day. Oh, you have met her, haven't
yes,
you?
Yes, I have met her. Yeah,
because
yeah,
when she
match,
came
yeah.
to watch the match, she was made very welcome.
Yes, indeed.
And her question is, new fans looking to watch the club for the first time, will they always be made very welcome?
Well, I hope when Catherine came, she was made to feel welcome.
It certainly was.
And yeah, I hope so. I think Runcorn fans have always been welcoming in that sense. Runcorn fans are very passionate about their football. I don't think there's any two ways about that. Just like any other set of football fans are. But no, I hope any set of people who come into the club will be made most welcome.
Mike's got a question. Come on, Mike.
Okay, Derek, do I have to give an answer to this one as well?
No.
Now, we've got a few fundraising initiatives which are ongoing at the club at the moment. One of which is the cabaret evening to be held at the Lion Hotel on Greenway Road on November the 8th. Perhaps, Derek, you could just tell the listeners how they can obtain details of the club's forthcoming events on a regular basis.
Yeah, sure.
That's not a set-up question, is it?
I think he set that one up for me. Yeah, the website is the best place, obviously, to look at that. We have an events page on there. And what we've tried to do is to get a diverse range of events set up. Even going back to last Friday evening when I came down to Beechwood Community Centre and we had a concert there which Frodsham Silver Band had put on. And that's the way we need to raise the money. It's £300 or £400 here, £300 or £400 there. That's the way we're going to raise the money. We're not going to raise the money in great, vast amounts, especially in the present economic climate. We've got to be grateful for the money we can get. So, yeah, very much, if you look on the club's website, there's always details on there. We've gone for a slightly different kind of social event this time, in terms of calling it a cabaret evening. The Lion Hotel, of course, is now run by Gary and Bell Oates from the Waterloo as well. Gary and Bell have been hugely, hugely supportive of the club this year in terms of shirt sponsorship, as of WSR in terms of the away kit sponsorship. They have been superb sponsors, but I think from my point of view, they are sponsors from within the area as well, and that is so hugely important to us. We need local organisations, we need local businesses to understand that we are here to stay, that we are really going to make this happen, and we'd like them to get on board with us. We really would like them to be part and parcel of this, because there's so much that kind of facility can offer to the local community. We want Runcorn Linnets to be at the centre of that local sporting community. That's the important bit for us.
Just had an email from Stephen. Please? Bucko, this is gold. I don't know where he got my nickname from. That's a bit cheeky, but we'll go with it. Bucko, this is gold. Derek's a modern-day Runcorn FC Linnets legend. Which is nice of him. When he speaks, we listen. Everything he said is bang on. His memories are amazing. It's an education to hear this and be present listening to him live on air.
Well, thank you for that.
Praise
indeed. It's praise indeed, but
saves me saying it.
But not something I think of myself as. And it's interesting because I've been through this a few times recently, speech making and so on, even to Friday nights when Headley asked me to say a few words. And you look back and you think, well, why am I doing it? Well, I'm doing it because I enjoy it, first and foremost. I enjoy doing it. But it's my team. And if we hadn't got off our backsides and done something, then it wouldn't have been there. And I've quoted this story very often, that people say, well, when did you really get the idea that this was going to happen? And Paul Ramsden, if he's listening, will know exactly what I'm going to say, because it was one dark, wet, windy night up at Bradford when we were I think 6-0 down, as the old club was obviously on its way down and out, and we were both standing there, and I suddenly said to him, I said, what are we actually going to do on Saturday afternoons if all this folds? And his first words were, we're going to have to go shopping. And I thought, no,
it's not going to happen.
I'm not going to go shopping on a Saturday afternoon, not after all these years. So in that sense, yeah, we've been driven, I suppose, by selfishness to some degree, in the sense that we did want it, but we also felt there were an awful lot of other people who wanted it as well. You've had your memories just the same as I have of all this, and why should we let it go without putting some kind of a fight over it? If it had all fallen flat after the first season, I suppose I could have lived with it and said, okay, that's it, we gave it a go, didn't work. But if we'd not tried, then we'd never have forgiven ourselves, I don't think. So it was always about that. But no, I don't like the legend bit at all, thank you very much. That's not a bit. And what I was going to say is there were various nice speeches made when I retired, of course, because I'd spent the whole of my teaching career in one school. I was 36 years in the same school, having done just about every job in the school, right up to being a deputy when I left the school, a very large school up in North Yorkshire. And I went to the head long before, because I knew he would want to make long speeches and this, that, and the other. I said, look, intrinsically, I'm a very private kind of person. And the one thing that people know I'm passionate about is my football. There's nothing else that really makes me as passionate as watching my football team play, but it is about watching Runcorn. I don't watch very much football on the television nowadays. I think televised football has got an awful lot to be blamed for. And I think if it wasn't there, then we would have an awful lot more teams like Runcorn, much better supported by people. But no, you've got to have your Manchester United shirt or your Liverpool shirt or whatever it is nowadays. And that's just a shame, you know. I'd like to see the kids in Runcorn back to wearing Runcorn shirts like when I was a kid. That's what I'd really like. But thank you to Stephen for that comment. Thank you, Stephen.
I'm glad he's done it, because I wanted to say it. I didn't know how to say it without sounding too sickly. So Stephen's done it for us. We thank him for that. We talked about Wilkes's enthusiasm. Your enthusiasm has come across today, and I'm sure the listeners have really enjoyed the extended chat that we've had, what they've heard. We've one more question. We ask it of everybody, and it has to be asked of you, even if you're in your lofty status as club chairman. This time it came from John Urquhart last time, and it's come from Rob Kelly from Kent. You know Rob.
I do, yeah.
One of our distant linnets.
Yeah.
Do you prefer Pimm's or fruit cider?
That's a real question, that one, isn't it, of course? One of the great problems I've had, of course, with this, and I'm not a great drinker, but, of course, wherever I go, I can't drink anywhere, because I've always got a 70-mile drive back home as well. But I suppose I'd have to say Pimm's, right?
Hey, that's one vote for Pimm's. Wilksy avoided it by saying he's Blue Wicked, which is now known as Blue Wilksy. You're listening to Mark and Tom on the Sunday Sports Show. We've had an extended show today to speak with Derek Greenwood. It's been an absolute pleasure having Derek in the studio today, and we will do it again, I'm sure, in the not-too-distant future. We're going to get Wilkes in again. We've got Sean coming up with Soul Hour, so we look forward to that. Derek, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Interesting. I know the listeners will be very pleased with what they've heard.
It's been brilliant.
From the feedback that we've had already. There will be a Sunday sports show next Sunday, but before that we have the Friday sports show to look forward to, 6 o'clock on a Friday. That'll be interesting to listen to that for Halton Community Radio sports coverage.